Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. We are all coming off a late night of watching football, so it's going to be a spicy Friday show for you at home. He's got takes. He's got takes. I have a couple of takes. Here's what we got going on over the course of the next 3 hours. Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, they're facing off in Kansas City on Sunday. That's going to be a great matchup. The Rams might be without Todd Gurley when the Niners come to town, but we got to start with some Thursday night football in Foxborough. You got Tom Brady and the Patriots hosting the Giants. Brady's first pass of the game. It'll go 19 yards to Sony Michel, and with that, he moves past Peyton Manning for second most passing yards all time. Next up, by the way, Drew Brees. Later in the first, Giants punt is blocked. Boy, the Pats do that a lot. Rookie Chase Winovich with the scoop and score gets the Pats on the board, 7-0. Second quarter, Giants get back in this. Daniel Jones finds Golden Tate. That's a 64-yard touchdown. Giants within seven. But that Pats top-ranked defense would prevail, forcing the fumble and then returning it. There it is, 22 yards for the touchdown. Pats go up 28-14. Later in the fourth, Tom Brady would punch it in for his second rushing touchdown of the game. Oldest player ever, by the way, with two rushing touchdowns. Pats win 35-14 to remain undefeated at 6-0. Here is Tom Brady after the win.
Happy we won. Happy to get to 6-0. We just grinded it out pretty good. Got kind of forced into one group, one grouping there in the second half. I don't think that's ever happened in 20 years. But defense played great. Special teams played great. Outside of a few plays, you know, but it would have been pretty good. So we're hanging in there.
All right, Nick, this is the question that we've been asking for their first five games and now the six games. Are the Patriots a great team, or are they taking advantage of, shockingly they have one, a soft schedule?
Well, they are one of the best defensive teams through 6 weeks of a season the league's ever had. Every number says so. Mm-hmm. Regular stats like points per game allowed, advanced stats like DVOA, they all say this is an all-time great defense we are watching that might be led by, for the first time in my memory on a Patriots defense, a great defense led by a corner. Stephon Gilmore has to be the leading contender for Defensive Player of the Year. Through a few weeks, he had made the MVP rankings we did on the show, and he has only upped his play week by week. He played a perfect football game last night. Kyle Van Noy, one of the players that says, you guys always just say we're system guys and we don't get enough credit. He had a nice
little
scoop.
Don't say our names.
Don't say our names. Well, Kyle Van Noy, scoop and score. He did the thing they teach you not to do in New England, which is reach for the pylon because it can end up being a touchback.
But thank goodness it was a touchdown for him.
Right, absolutely. Because that game was still in the balance at that point in time. This is a great, great defense. The defense has, and special teams have scored five touchdowns. The defense has allowed three touchdowns. That's how good this defense is. Is this a great team? They didn't look to me like a great team last night. They didn't look like a great offense last night. They looked like a team that not only was taking advantage of the schedule, but in this schedule, this team being depleted due to injuries. I don't think you could watch last night's game and more injuries rack up for the Patriots see on the offensive side and feel great about where their offense is, even though you end the game, you see they have 35 points. This is a special defense. The greatest coach of all time and a quarterback who gets more of a benefit of doubt than any quarterback ever because he's earned it. But I don't think this is a great football team because one major facet of their game, the offense, I don't think's that good right now.
Yeah, and most of the time in the NFL, especially with parity, they're not a lot of great teams in the league.
Sure.
Now, what you'll have is teams that will have great seasons, teams that will have great units, and the Patriots, we know, they're a great organization. Their defense, we're going to give them that. They're really talented, and we expected them to be great. But when we looked at the schedule, we knew the schedule was going to be very, very soft. We didn't think they were going to have their normal September struggle. So New England, out of respect, three times back-to-back-to-back Super Bowls, I'll give them that. But this is the least talented team. That team last night was the least talented team of the last 4 years. So typically, we don't. It's hard to reach greatness early in the season. That defense is playing at a level of greatness, but I would say it's a combination. We give them credit. We thought the defense was going to be good. You cannot replace all the talented offensive players. Last night, they lost Josh Gordon. You can see that offensive line. They're going to continue to have problems week in and week out. Their tight ends, I mean, they are a mash unit. Like, they only had one tight end. It was the last night that was healthy at the end of the football game. So when you look at the holes that they have offensively, I think that right now we'll reserve great and say right now we got some good teams. Kansas City's good. San Francisco is good. Greatness, we're going to have to see a lot more.
And what does it say about this Patriots team that the last 2 weeks against Washington, now against the Giants, they were both in those games? Yeah, you could say they have a cupcake schedule, but they play two teams that aren't supposed to be very good that were within striking distance of the New England Patriots.
Hard to blow teams out when you don't have a great offense. I mean, that's what it means. What it means is...
I mean,
is,
you already got the defense and special team scoring, right, and you still couldn't blow them
out. Right. I mean, that's what it means. And that's why the margin of error for teams that are great, great defensive teams but struggle offensively so much smaller, because you can't get a team in the negative. You can hold a team to zero, you can hold a team to seven, but if your offense struggles like it did in Washington in the first half and it's 9-7 with 30 seconds left, even though you end up pulling away, it's going to be close. Last night, it's 21-14 in the fourth quarter up until that Kyle Van Noy play.
Like 8 minutes left or something.
And by the way, the Patriots defense or special teams had already scored a touchdown.
And it was still close.
Right, and on another block punt. So, like, that's why. Let's the other team in the AFC, the Chiefs, this week notwithstanding, great offense, really questionable defense. When they look great, they are blowing people out because they're, you know what I mean? You've got to try to keep pace with them. You get out of your game. They can be up 31-13 and coast home. This is a different type of formula. We have right now the three best defenses in football all have one thing in common. You do not trust their offense. That is the Buffalo Bills, the Chicago Bears, and the New England Patriots. Now, obviously, you trust Brady more than you trust Trubisky and Josh Allen. I'm not saying they're the same. But what those three teams have in common is their offense is the big question mark on their team. We saw it again last night with New England.
Yeah, we do trust Brady more. But Brady's the only one of those three that can't move. So with questionable offensive lines, and that offensive line, we are going to be talking about that offensive line. It will be the storyline of the season. Because if Tom Brady, it won't be arm strength. It won't be he gets old. It's the wear and tear. The licks from Washington game,
right,
the licks that he took last night, the overall toll on his body.
And I think that Tom Brady, it's going to be a discussion moving forward. He didn't throw a touchdown. He had two rushing ones, but didn't throw a touchdown. Hasn't looked fantastic over the course of the last couple of weeks. Yes, part of it's the offensive line, but part of it might also be Tom Brady.
Threw a pick in this third straight game, had the strip sack where he thought his tight end was going to be able to push that guy away from him. He wasn't able to. Brady got hit, not expecting it, which is something you almost never see because his pocket awareness is so great. But also, while I've been there aren't many Tom Brady critics, so I'm kind of considered one, even though I consider him obviously the greatest quarterback of all time. Man, he's got a tough job right now. The offensive line is not very good, and I don't know who he's throwing to.
We lost another one last night.
They threw to a number 80 yesterday, and I was like, man, I swear to God, Amendola's not on the team anymore. And it wasn't. It was Gunnar Olszewski, I think is his name. Olszewski. I don't know who that is. Jacoby Myers, undrafted free agent, who had a nice preseason. Right now, he's their second best healthy receiver. It's Julian Edelman and replacement level players all along the skill position. That's got to be a concern for New England as they approach the varsity portion of their schedule.
Let's move on. Let's talk about one of the marquee NFL matchups this weekend. Texans and Chiefs, battle of the class of 2017 quarterbacks. Deshaun Watson, the 12th overall pick, and Patrick Mahomes taking two spots ahead of him. Both franchise quarterbacks have led their teams to first place in their respective divisions. And with Deshaun and Mahomes facing off for the first time in their careers, the two already have history.
I know Pat pretty well. You know, we kind of go way back from early college days, being able to, you know, work out in California, Southern California, together with Jordan Palmer and different other coaches and throughout college and different camps. So, you know, we're real, real good friends and have a lot of mutual friends and kind of things in common.
Yeah, I actually got to meet him in college. I think we were both going into our junior year. We went to a little QB camp out in California, and I got to meet him and talk to him, and we did back and forth about how that he did his stuff in Clemson and how I did myself at Texas Tech, and kind of been able to stay in touch a little bit. I mean, he's a great player. He's been a great player for a long time, had success at every level he's played at, and it'll be a great challenge for us as a team to get to go up against a team of that caliber.
This is going to be a fun one to watch, especially with both quarterbacks where they are. What do you think the key will be to this matchup, Nick?
Who can protect their quarterback better, without question? When Deshaun Watson is kept clean, he's as good as any player. Saw it last week. Zero sacks, just the second time in his career. He has been sacked zero times in a game. Both of those times, he threw for five touchdowns. Now, he's not going to throw five touchdowns every time he's kept clean, but with their wide receiver weapons, with Will Fuller, who is an excellent speed threat, DeAndre Hopkins, who does everything a receiver can do at an elite level except for speed, there, and Deshaun Watson's ability to read the field and to beat you with his legs, if he's not under constant duress, he is, without question, one of the five best quarterbacks in football. And for Patrick Mahomes, where they just signed Stefan Wisniewski because their left guard Andrew Wiley was hurt. He might start this weekend. The left tackle, Eric Fisher, is still dealing with that core muscle injury that he had surgery about. Mm-hmm. The left side of that offensive line is going to be replacement level. J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus have created quite the pass-rushing duo even without Jadeveon Clowney there for the Houston Texans. They have 9 sacks, 14 tackles for a loss, 5 forced fumbles combined between those two players. So whose offensive line can hold up long enough for their quarterback, because I think Tyreek Hill is going to be back this week, to be able to make plays to one of their many talented receivers. That, to me, will be the key to this game, with one small addendum being Bill O'Brien era in Houston, he's never won a big road game. Never. He doesn't have a single, what you would call, quality road win against a really good opponent. So the Texans would be trying to do something they have not done yet since Bill O'Brien's been the coach.
Bill O'Brien and Andy Reid, to me, they're the key to the game. Which one of these coaches is going to be able to protect their quarterback? I know most of the attention, most of the conversation will be about the quarterbacks because they're that good. But who will assist these quarterbacks, Jenna, in doing their job? First of all, protection-wise, you can't have a great deal of protections. The Texans, the way they get into the backfield, you talked about the sacks, the tackles for losses. So the team, defensive front, will Chris Jones get back to the level that he played at last year? But I believe that the Texans have a huge advantage going against the Chiefs' offensive line because it's about negative plays. How many tackles for losses, how many sacks can they create that put the Chiefs in unfavorable down and distance? Because that's when you can force Patty Mahomes to drive the ball down the field and create turnovers. So will Bill O'Brien do that? Will he be able to, will they be able to do it on a consistent basis? And from a coaching standpoint, which one of these coaches is going to have some type of supportive running game so the defense doesn't tee off? So from a pass protection standpoint, it becomes key as far as avoiding sacks. Last week, I thought you made a great point as far as Deshaun. There's only 2 games he hadn't been sacked in, and in those games, he's been amazing. 10 total touchdowns in that. So both of these coaches, to me, are under the spotlight as far as trying to create an advantage for their best players.
Andy Reid actually said, when asked about Deshaun Watson, he said, look, these are 2 very similar quarterbacks, both very smart, both have great vision in the passing game, great feet, great leadership. Both came into the league already knowing how to throw, so they were one step ahead of some of these other veteran quarterbacks who have sort of taken a couple years. How similar are these two athletically?
Oh, I think Deshaun's a better athlete than Patrick Mahomes. I think Patrick Mahomes is a better thrower. I think, would you disagree with either one of those?
Yeah, I think that it's, both of them are very, very good athletes. It's hard to say someone, and Deshaun is a better pure athlete as far as he can probably do more athletic things, but Patty Mahomes could be playing Major League Baseball. So it's hard to say a guy is a better athlete than a guy that could be a two-sport. But the obvious is Patty Mahomes is one of the best throwers at the ball. He can get the ball up and down, if it being short, being intermediate, down the seams, and he's more accurate than Deshaun is.
And the biggest difference in what they've experienced throughout their careers, because statistically they're remarkably similar. They both won 17 games in this league. Now, Mahomes only has 5 losses to Deshaun's 10 because Deshaun started more games his rookie season. They both thrown for 7,200 yards in this league. They both have Mahomes has 61 touchdowns to Deshaun's 56. The difference is this. In his career, Deshaun has been sacked 99 times. In his career, Patrick Mahomes has been sacked 35 times.
Wow.
And so almost three times the sacks in only five more games. It's that's been the difference in what they each has been supported with, what each has had to deal with. I think, Chris, your point on the running game is a really interesting one, because I don't think Chris Jones is going to play. I don't think the Chiefs expect Chris Jones to play. He's their best defensive lineman. Even though they gave Frank Clark all that money, he's their best interior pass rusher and run stuffer. Would the Texans be committed to running the football, which is where the Chiefs have been able to be had last year and this year? Or are you going to get caught up in trying to match points with the Chiefs and a Deshaun Mahomes duel? If that happens, as great as Deshaun is, I think that favors the Chiefs heavily. If they try to do what the Colts did, teams, even if you don't necessarily have the personnel the Colts had, especially on the offensive line, you should try to mimic as much as you can what they did, because it's not just because they went to Arrowhead and won. Their ability to keep the Chiefs off the field was better than any team has done in this entire mini Patrick Mahomes era. That's what the Texans maybe should do. I don't know if it's what they will do.
Astros escaped the divisional round last night, beating the Rays 6-1. They advanced to the ALCS to face the New York Yankees. And man, Jose Altuve was a big reason why. Finished the series with three home runs. Nick, this is the matchup that we all wanted. The Astros and the Yankees. What do you want to see here?
Oh, I am so excited for this. This is what the entire baseball season was leading up to. Shout out, by the way, to Jose Altuve, who last night became the all-time major league leader for postseason home runs by a second baseman. You think about that. Jose Altuve is still he's probably got another decade playing baseball ahead of him. Became the all-time leader in postseason home runs for a second baseman. This is the best team in baseball, the Houston Astros, against the best lineup in baseball, Chris's New York Yankees. I'm so glad Gerrit Cole pitched that gem he did last night. Eight innings, two hits, gave up one home run, and that was it. Because it sets up this matchup that we've been waiting for all year.
It is a classic matchup. I'm looking forward to it. We got our stage manager, Joe. He's like, yeah, bring on the Astros. But I wouldn't mind having the Rays.
Yeah, and everything. A little anxious.
It should be a great, great series. I hope it doesn't take something away from the World Series, because what's happening on the other side. But this should be a great, great series.
Yeah, Rays had a great series, but it's nice to see the Astros playing the Yankees, which is what, if you're a fan of the game, this is what you wanted to see.
Astros top three pitchers, $96 million this year. The Rays as a team, $64 million this year.
As a team.
So the fact that they even got it to five.
Yeah, top three players on Astros, I think, were the whole payroll of the Rays.
All right, on Sunday, the Cowboys face the 0-4 Jets, who finally get their quarterback. Dallas looking
what?
Get it? Their quarterback. Dallas looking to bounce back from their two-game skid. Questions mounting about Ezekiel Elliott's numbers this season. Slowest start of his career. That could affect Dak. You've also got two key players hobbled with injuries. Tackles Tyron Smith and Lael Collins. That could also very well affect Dak. See, what do you expect from the Cowboys on Sunday?
I expect the Cowboys to get well. When you're talking about a defense that's absent of C.J. Mosley in the middle, one of the great linebackers came over from Baltimore, they paid him all that money. We haven't seen a whole bunch of him. It's hard to run a defense, and the Jets' defense is bad, not only as far as points that they're giving up, not only rushing, passing rating, so they can't stop the opposing quarterback, and they can't stop you from running the football. So this is a get-right game for Dallas. Look for them with their banged-up offensive line to be able to get Zeke. I'd be shocked if Zeke doesn't get 20 carries in this game, and they're going to lean on the play-action pass, because when you have offensive line problems, we'll start to see this as a theme going throughout the season. Last night's game, New England, play-action pass was the number one pass. Why? You can't depend on the offensive line. I can utilize the tight end. There's more security. There's less receivers into the route, but there's more protection, and that's what I expect the Dallas Cowboys to do. You know they have a weaker tackle on the left. You know you have a weaker tackle on the right. Let's play football smart. And Kellen Moore, all right? You got to be a little more creative, all right? You were very good the first three games. You went back to the real NFL the last two games against the Saints and Green Bay, teams that you know will be vying for playoff spots. Now, the Jets aren't in that category, But let's be a little more creative and know your weakness, and it happens to be the two tackles on that offense, Nick.
Quick point on the Jets before we get to the Cowboys. Even though the Jets are top 10 in the league in yards per rush allowed and passer rating allowed, their defense has been awful. Why? Well, because they can't stop the pass over. They might have a decent passer rating they're allowing, but they're bottom 10 in passing yards allowed, and they are on one of the most historic red zone streaks of futility I've ever seen. I heard the stat during last week's Jets game, and I could not believe it. They are on over 40 consecutive trips that the opponent has made to the red zone that the opponent has gotten points. It's been over 40 straight times that they have failed to force a turnover, a missed field goal, turnover on downs, anything. You get to the red zone on the Jets, you're coming away with at least three, if not seven. And they also had gone something like 55 possessions of their own without getting into the red zone. The Jets are miserable. And now they'll be better with Sam Darnold, but they're still right now one of the worst football teams in the league. The question for Dallas is all about those two guys you mentioned. And I'm not talking about Dak Prescott. No Tyron Smith, no Lyle Collins. And so how can you are going to be on your backup left tackle who played very poorly in that Green Bay game, and then your backup tackle on the right-hand side? How big of an issue is that? Now, the Jets haven't been able to get to the opposing quarterback this year. They're 30th in the NFL in sack percentage. So maybe this is a game where you can work some things out, and the Cowboys are touchdown favorites on the road, and they should be because of the lack of talent overall in the Jets team. But I do want to see how this team looks without Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins, because I'm not certain that they will have Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins back the following week when they play arguably their biggest game of the year against the Philadelphia Eagles. So this could be a good test case. How will they look against Philly, which obviously is a better pass rush than the Jets?
And when everyone talks about, well, let's get Zeke more and what can Dak do, it's a domino effect. If you have those two tackles that are injured and out, it obviously affects the passing game and the running game.
No doubt.
Division rivals going at it. Jared Goff and the Rams playing host to Jimmy G and those undefeated San Francisco 49ers. Goff might be without his all-pro running back Todd Gurley, who's been nursing a thigh contusion. Niners coming off a big win over Cleveland, looking to remain atop the NFC West. Chris Carter, who's got the edge Sunday on Fox.
I'm a believer in San Francisco. I believe this is their first big message game. I don't believe it was the Monday night game. I believe methodically they felt like they had a huge advantage going against the Browns, but they didn't think the Browns were that good. They didn't have any respect for the Browns. In this game, this is a respect game. They got a lot of respect for what the Rams are doing, the way they've built their team. They want to be in the same position. Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, they want to be in the same position. They thought last year, because their quarterback, third week of the season, he gets knocked off, put their plans on hold for 2019. So what'd they do? They went out and got Nicky Bosa. Add him to the other four first-round picks that they got on the defense. Richard Sherman would be another year removed from his Achilles tear to be able to stabilize that secondary. Now, they still don't have another wide receiver for Jimmy Garoppolo to go to besides George Kittle, but I believe this is the message game for them. Any team in the NFL knows the best way to in the playoffs is win your division. And you realize that when you've been the doormat of the division and it's time to start facing those teams that have been beating you, I think the Rams have beaten them four times in a row. Those are the games that you get respect. It's not in the media you get respect. It's from the guys in the league that have been winning, and that comes with Seattle. They got to beat Seattle to be legitimate, and they got to be able to beat the Rams. And that will erase all the questions. Well, who have they played? This is the game for the 49ers. This is the game that John Lynch, when he left television, and they put all that responsibility in making him that general manager. And I'm pulling for John Lynch. He is a great guy. And they brought Kyle Shanahan the year before that. This is the type of games that they thought that they would be playing. When they pitched this idea to the owner, this was the games they thought they'd be in. San Francisco and the 49ers are back, Nick.
So this is one that I think it'll surprise you, but because I've been very skeptical of the Rams, picked them to miss the playoffs, but I actually disagree with you on this one. I think this is a get-right game for the Rams, and a number of reasons. One is, Sean McVay's 10-1 with extra time to prepare, either coming off a bye, a Thursday night game, beginning of the season. The one loss was to the superhuman Bill Belichick. So against, as Warren Sharp put it, mortal coaches, he's undefeated with extra time to prepare. Second of all, the one place where the Rams have been the most susceptible this year is the back end of their defense. Tlaib and Peters are not playing great. I don't know that the Niners have the personnel to take full advantage of that, the way Tampa did when Tampa added all those points with Godwin and Mike Evans, even the way Seattle was able to in some regard with Tyler Lockett. And I don't think the Rams are the Super Bowl team they were last year, I don't think they're about to lose three games in a row. This game at home, the Niners, by the way, they've been dealing without Joe Staley. Now they're going to be without Mike McGlinchey, it looks like, in this game. We know they're going to be without Kyle Juszczyk. So much of that power running game that they've been elite at, how elite will they be in this football game? So I don't know exactly who the Niners are just yet. I know they're 4-0, but I also know that 4-0 has come against Tampa, Cincy, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland.
Right.
And so I am going to, if they win this football game, then you can say, oh, all right, San Francisco, because they're real tough stretch of games. Final eight games of the year, they play Seattle twice. They play Green Bay. They play Baltimore. They play New Orleans. They play the Rams again. This will be a good test case for how they will fare over that final half of the year when the schedule gets really hard. But I think the Rams, even with potentially without Todd Gurley, find a way to win this game and get back on the right track.
So that's what I want to ask you about, and you touched on this yesterday. The big injury news is that now Todd Gurley has a thigh contusion, whether or not it's related to the arthritic knee, who knows. But are the Rams in a point where they just can't really depend on him anymore week to week? I mean, he's played, but he's played in minimal spots. Now he might not even play.
That's the reality. That's why you use a third-round pick. It's not because you got a lot of faith in a guy. No, you don't use a high draft pick like that to put a quality player in your program if you believe in a guy who a year before you made the highest paid running back in the history. So they know they made a mistake. But, Jenna, they can't admit that they made a mistake. But this will be the story of Todd Gurley. Now, back to Nick as far as Nick's point. Marcus Peters and Tlaib, neither one of those guys can run. If you look at all the big plays they've given up, guys have gone over the top. San Francisco will make them play eight in the box, which means they got to play man-to-man on the outside. And one thing San Francisco got, they got speed.
Marquise Goodwin.
All right, so they're going to get the best looks on the outside. You don't have to be a great receiver when I can force that type of pressure and that many bodies into the box. I don't have to be a great route runner. All I got to do is get a good play fake, and it's just me and you. My speed versus your technique. Peters, no technique. Once he gets into the game, Tlaib, looking a little old at corner. So when you look at these matchups in games, you have to look at what is San Francisco going to do to be able to help out their wide receivers. And there's not one player in their offense, if he's not there, that takes away their power running game. Joe Staley's out. He's the best player that they have. They still power run the ball. Now, they will miss their fullback, but they will run the same style, and people have run on the Rams. This is going to be the best running team in the NFL when we get done, San Francisco.
If you're right, if San Francisco wins this game, then the Rams are in real, real trouble. As you go from 3-0 to 0-3 with especially the stomach punch loss. Remember how they lost last week. Greg Zuerlein's field goal goes right over the top, almost over the top of the upright, just barely misses after a terrible delay, a game penalty. The Rams will be in real rough shape in what looks like the toughest division in football, but I think they find a way to win Sunday.
But meanwhile, if the Niners win, they're in great shape at 5-0. Phenomenal start for them. How much do you put the Browns' woes on Odell, or on the relationship between Odell and Baker, or Odell just coming up a little bit short this season?
I put zero. I put it on Baker Fakeville. You know, that's usually what happens. What happens is he scratched a nerve. And when you know what it is, when you scratch a nerve with the, you know, the veterans and the players in the league, when you start getting anointed and crowned and start talking stuff, speaking on other people's rosters, I told you guys Monday about how I knew that he had pissed people off and how Bosa was tackling his arms, trying to make him fall on his face, right? So now what happens is we always talk about the sophomore slump. Right, and we haven't really seen the current quarterbacks come back and take steps back.
Nope.
He's one of the first guys to take that, you know, have that sophomore slump and take a step back. But it's for a reason. It's because they thought that he was ready to take more of the playbook, take more ownership of the offense too early. So now he's trying to do too many things because he doesn't have the weapons that he needed. Remember I said earlier this week, too, his house was built on straw, meaning that his tackles are so weak that it doesn't matter who you have at receiver. If I don't have the time to survey the field,
I won't get you the
all
ball.
I can do is throw quick stuff to Landry. You see Landry's eating because he's the guy that's the yak guy. You know, yeah, we know Odell's the guy that can catch a slant and take it 85. We saw it against the Jets. But we know Landry's the tough guy that, much like Golden Tate, that's scrappy, physical, that can run through tackles. So now you look at Baker Mayfield, what does he have to face this week? And I hear Odell talking about, yeah, we're 2-3. Well, go ahead and rack that up to 2-4 because now you have another problem. Now you have, you're facing another team that's built with physicality and you got an elite quarterback that can elevate his players around him. Even though you look at the rosters, you're going to say Cleveland has a better roster, but now he has to face, you know, Clowney and Ziggy. So now what happens when he flushed? Now those edges are set. So now they're going, when he tries to release and escape, he's going to get pulled up, thrown off the back foot, and that's where the errant passes are going to come. They are in trouble, and they're in trouble right now.
So I agree with a lot of what you said, except for that last point. I would not be shocked at all if the Browns win this game.
Okay.
Their season has gone loss, win, loss, win, loss. They've been the definition of inconsistent, which was one of your concerns. But they also, when you, not the elite quarterback part, not yet, but what you described with Seattle sounds a lot like Baltimore, and they played their best game of the season, hung 40 on Baltimore.
Russell Wilson.
But no, I understand. Right. No, I get that part of it. That's why I said not the elite quarterback part. But what you're talking about, the problems that Seattle's defense could present, Baltimore presents a lot of those same problems. So I think Cleveland's got some real issues. And I think Odell looking for the bright side in 2-3 is a little misguided. And I think it speaks to one of Chris's concerns, which is how many guys in that locker room have been through a playoff race? How many of those guys in that locker room have playoff success? Because 2-3 doesn't feel that bad. Yeah, if you're used to 0-5, if you're used to 1-4, but if you're used to 4-1, if you're used to competing for a division, 2-3 does feel awful. Now, the Browns, their season's not over. And we all knew that the back half of their schedule is where things really soften. When you have Cincinnati twice, when you have Arizona, when you have Miami, when you have a wounded Pittsburgh team twice. They just need to survive this first half of the year. But with the game after this one being at New England, if they don't win this game on Sunday, it's going to be very hard to survive this first half of the year.
Yeah, this is going to be a difficult situation for Cleveland. Because the style for which they're trying to play, they want to play three receivers, one tight end, one back, spread the field out, still run the ball to spread formation. They like Callaway, all right, the troubled receiver just coming off a suspension. You could see they tried to get him in the game plan. Odell throwing the ball as much as he's thrown the ball, it lets you know they're trying to get him involved in the game plan, not the way you get a star receiver involved in the game plan. Because what they have now, Jarvis Landry has been very consistent. Their problems have not been... It's not Baker's fault. It's not OBJ's fault. It's their offensive line's fault. Because when you have a bad offensive line, it becomes hard to play well. Baker's playing in the league that he didn't see last year because he wasn't scrambling around. He wasn't trying to run for his life. He was picking a guy, getting his eyes on him, and letting it fly to him. And that's why we saw the elite ability. That's why we saw the rookie touchdown record. That's why we saw the accuracy. I still believe that Baker Mayfield is an elite leader. But you have a lot of things to be able to learn about this league. Freddie Kitchens, at this point, when you need a win desperately as they do, OBJ don't need to be talking about getting me the ball and getting involved. You need a win.
Yeah.
And the OBJ, he's not the kind of guy that can lead in a culture. He's got to learn. He hadn't won since he's been in the league. He's been in the playoff one time. So for the thing that they understand what it takes to win 10 games, what it takes to win your division, they don't. Freddie Kitchens doesn't understand.
Who in that locker room understands? Who in that locker room is what?
I've been saying that they didn't have.
The blind leaving the blind. Right? And you talk about the difference between a championship pedigree team like Seattle, and you talk about, you try and compare them to Baltimore. Baltimore's trying to replace Terrell Suggs. They're soft over there in Baltimore right now. You know, they look good, they're flashy, and they have some physical players, but they're soft at the edges. They're not. Bobby Wagner isn't going to allow Nick Chubb to run crazy. They're going to keep him and make Baker have to go through 8 and 12 play drives, and he can't sustain it because all they have to do is get one negative play because of the lack of productivity they have from their tackles. Then it puts them behind schedule. Then what Baker has to do, he has to play hero ball. You can't play hero ball consistently. We see it with Mahomes. Mahomes running around having to be great all the time. We just need you to be consistent, but you can't do that when you can't protect your edges.
So the key for Seattle is just don't let Baker get comfortable.
And they're going to sit early.
And you'll win.
They're going to sit. They're going to sit early. They're going to press bail that cover three, and they're going to make sure that they take away the deep outs and make sure that Baker can't release the ball earlier, because they know if they just hold up for a second,
right,
that those edges are going to come in. And what it feels like to Baker is the walls closing in on him, and he feels like, you know what, let me get rid of the ball, because he's starting to take a lot of hits, and now his eyes are starting to come down and see the rush opposed to feeling the rush and keeping his eyes downfield to make those plays.
Be very, very careful with Seattle. All right, Seattle is one team at home, and they're one team on the road.
Agreed.
Go back and look at their record since Pete Carroll has been there.
Even
win the 12s, man, they play with energy and everything. Sometime on the road, you're like, wow, where's the championship pedigree? Mm-hmm. Where's the playoff pedigree? Where's the Pete Carroll experience? Where is the leadership? So when they're on the road, sometime they're a different team. We believe that that's what's going to potentially happen this weekend.
And I know, to that point, I know they're 2-0 on the road this year. That one first win came at Pittsburgh when Ben Roethlisberger got injured. The second win came at Arizona, a team that's searching for who it actually is. And so they're yet to face a real road test this season. I think they will on Sunday.
All right, on to the Eagles now. They're getting ready for the Vikings Sunday, that game on Fox. The last time Philly played in Minnesota, they were hoisting the Lombardi Trophy.
Oh.
But this season, both teams are sitting at 3-2, both teams with question marks surrounding their offense, and both teams hoping for a win to stay above 500. CC, who's got the edge in this game, Eagles or Vikings?
I got to say the Eagles. The Eagles right now, given the Vikings' offensive line problems and offensive continuity problems, the Vikings are a running team. After the last couple years being dominated by the tandem of Diggs and Thielen on the outside, right now their best player, the best player that I've seen play with the Vikings, is Dalvin Cook. He has been outstanding, and the offense runs through him. The offensive line, we know the last couple years, they've made a number of changes, but they're still the weakest unit that they have on their team, which exposes Kirk Cousins. Like, who is Kirk Cousins? In prime time, we know the type of quarterback he's been. When the games really don't matter that much, he's got some outstanding numbers. But for the Vikings to reach their potential, you're going to have to be able to beat teams like Philadelphia. Yep. And you have to play in a game where your quarterback is not a liability. All right, we've had complaints. Both receivers, Adam Thielen complained 2 weeks ago after the Chicago game. Stephon Diggs complained and didn't come to work for a couple days. They seemed to have worked some of those problems out last week, but that was just because of the opposition. When you play a team like Philadelphia that's going to challenge you as far as your protection, it's going to be hard to throw the ball. Even though they're secondary, you can get some big numbers. That interior seven, last week we saw them catch fire. I believe that continues against the Vikings. The Eagles got the edge in this matchup.
I agree 100%. I know Philly's the underdog in this game. I don't think they should be. And if for both of these teams, though, if they actually are the Super Bowl contender that they thought they were going into this year, they got to win this game. Like, either of these teams, after the up and down start, if Philly can't continue on this trajectory and go to Minnesota, winning in Minnesota is tough, and Minnesota's got a great running back, as Chris mentioned, an excellent defense. But if you're the team that is the most talented team in the league, one of the deepest teams in the league, you can go to Minnesota and get a win against a quarterback that has had one great game all year long. And if you're Minnesota, if you're the whole Kirk Cousins idea was, we were this close to the Super Bowl with Case Keenum, while we still have this great defense intact, before we have to pay all these guys, before all of them get so expensive, we're going to try to, in this 2 or 3 year maximum window with a better quarterback, get a step further. Well, then you got to win your home game against Philly. I don't think the loser of this game is crossed off of the playoffs by any stretch of the imagination, but it's hard to make an argument the loser of this game has any real Super Bowl hopes left, and they both came into the season with it. But I think Philly continues what they did against the Jets. Not 10 sacks, but their defensive line getting back to being the strength of their football team, to where Carson Wentz doesn't have to throw for 320 yards for them to have a chance to beat a quality opponent.
Who needs this win more?
I think both of them need it. I believe it's going to be tough. I believe Carson Wentz needs this too, from a confidence standpoint. This Vikings defense, they're for real. They're going to expose that offensive line of Philadelphia. To me, there's not a huge advantage. When I say who has the advantage, it's by a slight margin, because I believe the offensive line. That defense of Minnesota is going to give Wentz a whole bunch of problems. If they can't throw the ball deep, which they haven't been able to do since D-Jack got hurt, they're going to struggle. They haven't been consistently running the ball. So to think that Philadelphia is just going to march into Minnesota and get an easy win, it's not going to be that way. They got a lot of good football players. And yes, they did think that they were very, very close. And they thought if they could improve their quarterback, it would improve their offense. They might have improved their quarterback play, but their offense didn't improve because the offensive line. All right. They just took for granted that the offensive line is going to continue to improve. So Kirk Cousins is a better quarterback than the quarterbacks they had before. But the offensive line has not given them the ability that they can utilize the talent that they have on the outside. And now they have Dalvin Cook. Now they're situated to have some balance on that offense that could lead them into the playoffs.
Minnesota doesn't have the first or second ranked defense in every category like they did a couple years ago. But you look at it, they're in the top eight in essentially every major defensive category. The defense is one of the best in football. I'm wondering if Philadelphia can continue their trend of running the ball effectively. After the first 2 weeks of the season, they were getting less than 60 yards per game rushing. Since then, Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders combining for, I think, over 108 yards per game rushing. That takes a lot of the pressure off Carson Wentz. That's why Carson Wentz in these two wins, they've won, and he's averaged 175 yards per game through the air. I don't know that they're going to have the deep pass available to them in large capacity until Deshaun gets back. So it's Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders are going to have to continue what they've
done. I'll say this. If he has 170 yards, the Eagles will lose to the Vikings. Because they will not be able to run on the Vikings. The Vikings defense, they'll make them one-dimensional. If they don't have more than yards than that, the Eagles are going to hold that L.
With Josh Gordon injured, there is no hiding the lack of weapons for Tom Brady in the offense. Enter one, Rob Gronkowski, the three-time Super Bowl tight end. The shirtless tight end is enjoying retirement, clearly. But Robert Kraft is leaving the door open for a return, saying, quote, "We all love Gronk, so we can always pray and hope." CeCe, what do you make of that?
Well, I just think that, and I heard Mr. Kraft last night during this interview and everything. I just think people, and I was guilty of this one time. In all my years of dealing with the league, I've always had a great deal of respect for it. But there was one time I dropped my guard. And that's when I first retired after the 2001 season, had gone into broadcasting, working with HBO. And then the Dolphins get a number of receivers injured on a Monday night game. And the general manager calls me the next day. Now, I had sat down with the Dolphins that offseason. My home has always been in Florida the last 25 years. So I was very familiar with their organization, and they were a potential spot for me to land until I got the offer from HBO and decided to do that. I decided just on that phone call that I could come back because I had never thought about coming back before that. And because of someone else's injury, I didn't think about like where I was. All the things I had done leading up to having the type of career I had none of those things in place. And I took that what I knew about the league for granted. And 2 weeks later, I'm in the hospital. My kidneys are working 20%. So, yes, I know we're sitting around saying, yeah, Gronk should come back. They need another tight end. Don't take the league for granted. Don't take the type of work, the type of stamina, the type of focus that it takes to be an NFL player. And that's why I ended up in the hospital with my kidneys not working because I thought, oh, yeah, I haven't played 15 seasons already. I know how to do this. They only want me to play in the red zone. They only want me to play on third down. Oh, I can go out there and go to the gym because we had a bye week. I can do it for a couple weeks and get right back into shape. No, this game, we should have more respect for it. I should have had more respect for it. And until I was laying on that hospital bed and that doctor told me that my kidney was the most important thing, I had lost the proper amount of respect that you need to have for playing in the NFL.
So to me, there's two different ways to look at this. One is from the perspective Chris just laid out, which is if he were to come back, would he be able to function? Put that on this side of the table for another moment. The other side is, would the Patriots try to get him to come back? And that's a discussion we had a lot before the year, which is I find so interesting, I think, where you're at on where you believe the Patriots are as far as level of desperation. Because last night during the game, you tweeted, Patriots are going to call Gronk to try to get him to come out of retirement.
Man, the Patriots will call a monkey if he can block or catch.
Well, and so, right?
So for us to think that they're beyond, oh, absolutely, they're going to do what's best for them. They didn't hear Gronk's interview. They didn't hear Gronk crying when he said football had taken me to a dark place. They didn't hear all that. They disregarded that. When Kraft said, yeah, I'm praying, I'm hoping, Really?
Well, but so doesn't that speak to you, to their level of
desperation?
Because in the offseason when we talked about this, one thing we all agreed on was having a player not be a part of the program in the offseason, in the regular season, and parachute in November,
that is
the opposite of the Patriot way.
This is what people don't get about the Patriots. That being Super Bowl or no Super Bowl, they're always desperate to improve their roster. Even when they're stacked, they're desperate. All right? They're desperate to win. They're desperate to improve. That's what they do. So they don't wait for just an emergency for desperation. They're always in the sense of desperation. They will always look at a player regardless of what their situation was. They didn't need a receiver when they added Randy Moss, but they were like, man, I want to be better. They didn't need AB when they added AB. They were like, we can be that much better. And if there's an opportunity, and Bill Parcells taught Belichick this, you improve your roster by hook or by crook, either by draft, by free agency, or by the streets, or by the CFL. Any way you can improve your roster, that's what you're supposed to do, and that's the New England way. It's not, oh, we got a tight end hurt. You think they needed Hernandez when they had Gronk? No, they didn't. They're always looking to stockpile good player, better players than the ones that they have.
And right now, your story and the long history of guys trying to come out of retirement and not necessarily being ready to play notwithstanding, given who right now their tight ends are, given that they were on replacement level and then one of those replacement guys got hurt yesterday, I do imagine that they would love Gronk to come back, that they will try to get him to come back.
The thing that we take for granted, though, is even that replacement player, even that guy's got less talent,
is better prepared at this point.
Hell yes.
Well, then hold on.
He's been through the whole offseason. His body is ready for an NFL season. Even though I might have more talent, I might be able to do it for five plays better than him, but after the game, am I going to be able to follow up? Am I going to be able to practice? And I have no stamina because I have not worked out as if I was getting ready for an NFL season.
Well, then I'm confused. If that's the case, then why would the Patriots be interested? Why should they call him? Why would they be interested?
Because the team is better with him than without him.
Okay, go ahead, explain. I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
The more people that they have know the system, the only reason why these players are playing is because that's the best that they have. Gronk understands more. So even if Gronk just showed up, they have more versatility just because who Gronk is. Now, he's not going to be able to run down the field, but they have more pass protection. Gronk not lifting weights is a better end-of-the-line blocker than the guys that they have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, which is why before the year and right now, I've been saying I imagine the Patriots, if he was willing to come back, would want him to come back. That they didn't. I mean, they tried Benjamin Watson. Benjamin Watson is older than Gronk, much older than Gronk.
I would just have a serious conversation because if I'm going to take Gronk seriously, I have to listen to what he said. So I need Gronk to sit down and talk to someone before I put him on the football field. All right, he's not a piece of meat. The guy was in tears saying football had me in a very, very dark place. Did we forget that? So we just can send him out there into a football game and just like that didn't happen. There's a reason why Gronk walked away from football. And part of it's his head and part of it was his body. He couldn't do it at that level anymore. So now we're going to rush him back because the Patriots need him. I'm more concerned about Gronk than I am the Patriots.
I think you make a good point. It is a clear indication of just how desperate this team is. They're so desperate for a wide receiver or for someone to help out.
An established offensive player.
That they would dip back into that well.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Teddy Bridgewater looking to get his fourth straight win since taking over for the injured Drew Brees, proving his worth. But CC, the player with the most to prove on Sunday, is blank.
28.5. But wasn't that the number, Nick?
28-ish million, yeah.
Yo, cuz. I need Kirk Cousins, all right?
He ain't got nothing to prove, man. He got the president calling him after big games.
Prove? That lets you know you got something to prove. Because it doesn't happen last
that's
week.
That's the whole reason. I mean, yeah,
will we beat the Giants?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We beat the Giants because the wide receivers complained. Then we got a couple balls to him. Come on, Kirk Cousins. Mike, stop.
Big game for him.
I know I'm stuck with you for another year, but I will divorce you early.
I love that Chris is so out, man. Chris was the Chris's Kirk Cousins approval rating has just plummeted week by week. I'm gonna go with Baker. Baker Mayfield, man. He been a bottom five quarterback in the NFL this year. Year two, Dak had a year two slump, but all these other guys, Carson, Russell, Mahomes, Watson, Goff, pick your quarterback. Year two, they continue on upward trajectory. I want you to be on a list with those guys, not on a list with Dak Prescott. So Baker Mayfield, got to get it going.
And
in the
make
right
sure
direction.
You shake them hands, Baker, man. Everybody watching
he
you,
he should
bro.
Shake them extra
yeah,
three times. Go ahead. Good job, C.
Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs thought there was more there. We'll look to get back on track Sunday. It won't be easy against Deshaun Watson and a first-place Houston Texans team. Nick, the team that should be on upset alert Sunday is blank.
Not the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes, 16-0 on 1 p.m. or 4 p.m. starts. Has never lost a regular Sunday afternoon game. Minnesota Vikings, your team, Chris Carter, because I think you're right that Kirk Cousins got the most to prove or a lot to prove, and I don't think he's going to prove it. I think Philadelphia is going to continue this little mini winning streak they have, get it to three games. Vikings, 3-point favorites. They should be on upset alert.
The one thing that's been consistent in the league is the teams that we think are playoff teams, after a bad showing, that next week they come back with a big performance. Watch the Browns upset the Seahawks.
Ooh.
Seahawks, a lot of people are picking to win that division. Watch the Browns play a lot better. It's been consistent. Philadelphia, what'd they do on that Thursday night? They went to Green Bay with their season on the line. This is a pivotal game for Cleveland, because if they can stay around 500, one game above 500, they got a window at the end of their season.
Man,
they can get right. So if they can get the 10 wins, this becomes very important, getting back to 500 though, Nick.
All right, the Rams are 3-2, but Todd Gurley could be out Sunday, and with a tough Niners team coming to town, L.A. could be on the verge of a three-game losing streak. CC, the contender you're most worried about is blank.
I'm worried about Dallas, and not because of all the subjects we've been talking about. Is Zeke going to get back on a target? Is he really an elite thrower? No, I'm worried about that defense. DeMarcus Lawrence, they paid all that money to outside. He's making more money than Zeke, right?
Oh, yeah, making a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
He's the highest paid guy on the team.
He had shoulder surgery this offseason, and he has not played nearly to the level that we're used to, and that defense can be run on. Dallas Cowboys, you're on alert now.
The team I'm most concerned about is the Patriots after watching them last night. The Patriots' defense is as good, if not better, than advertised. The offense, though, is struggling against even the New York Giants. Your guy, hey, cuz, bring him a third time. Where did he get right against? The New York Giants. Tom Brady and that offense were stuck in a dogfight in that game despite having a blocked punt touchdown, and they had more injuries. Josh Gordon goes down in this game. One of their mediocre tight ends goes down in this game. They're talking about trying to pull Gronk away from us. We just hired him at Fox. Now you want to pull him out of retirement. So I'm worried about the Patriots offense once they start playing real.
Yeah, if you're a wide receiver, call them, man. They're going to give you a tryout.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Nah, man.
No, I ain't they flavor. They need something vanilla. They like slow, not talented. All
Nick, go ahead.
Sounds good.
Thank Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.